Hare Krishna. Very grateful and happy to be amidst all of you all here today at Slovenia. I'm speaking somewhere else also. Pardon? No. We're speaking Ramayana. So the next 2 days, today and tomorrow, we are going to be flooding you with a lot of Ram Katha and nectar from the Ramayana. Just to set the context of the Ramayana and the mood of the Ramayana, I'll speak an analogy that one of the very exalted writers of Ramayana, his name is Kamba Muni. He wrote the Ramayana in Tamil literature. This is a Ramayana that is very, 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 very well studied among the Sri Vaishnav Sampradaya. So Kamba, he says, Valmiki Ramayana is like an ocean of milk. Just imagine that you are standing in front of an ocean of milk, unlimited amount of milk. And Kamba says, he is like a cat standing in front of the ocean of milk. Now imagine, if there is a cat standing in front of an ocean of milk, there is so much milk, but how much can the cat digest? Just little, because the cat's stomach is so small. So if Kamba considers himself to be like a cat, we are like small ants, you know. And there is an ocean of milk in front of us. And if one drop of that milk falls on us, we drown. That's enough for us, you know. So in the next, today and tomorrow, we're going to be experiencing one drop of the nectar of the Ramayana. The Ramayana is unlimited. So the next 2 days, what I'll be doing will essentially be just to give you like an appetizer, you know, to give you a little taste of the Ramayana, and then you can explore on your own. Today I'll be speaking from a certain section of the Ramayana, which is known as Sundar Kand. Sundar Kand is considered to be one of the most beautiful and one of the most powerful sections of the Ramayana. In fact, a lot of people in India just read the Sundar Kand all their life. They constantly keep reading the Sundar Kand. There is a reason why people love the Sundar Kand so much. The Ramayana has six Kand or six sections. The Balakand, which is the first section of the Ramayana, speaks about approximately 13 years of the lifespan of Lord Ram. The Ayodhya Kand speaks the incidents which happened over a period of approximately 1 year. The Aranya Kand speaks about incidents that happened over a period of almost 13 years. The Kishkindha Kand speaks about incidents that happened over a period of approximately 2 months, two and a half months. The Ayodhya, the Yuddha Kand, which is the last section, speaks about incidents that happened over a period of almost 6 months. But Sundar Kand, which is the section that we're going to speak about today, it speaks about incidents that happen over a period of 2 days. Just 2 days of the, I mean, can you imagine a whole section of the Ramayana is only 2 days incidents that happen in the Ramayana. And that's why Sundar Kand is supposed to be exciting. And these 2 days are completely centered around Hanumanji. Sundar Kand kind of revolves around the personality of Hanuman. And all other Kands are named after incidents that happen in the, or the importance of that Kand. Like Bala Kand is the childhood of Lord Ram, Bala. Ayodhya Kand is all the incidents that happened in Ayodhya. Aranya means forest. Aranya Kand is all the incidents that happened in the forest of Dandakaranya. And Kishkindha Kand is all the incidents that happened in Kishkindha. And Yuddha Kand is a fight with Ram Ravan war. But Sundar Kand, the name is very different. Why is it called Sundar Kand? Sundar means beautiful. There are many reasons the Acharyas explain why it is called Sundar Kand. One very prominent reason is that Hanumanji, when he was born, he was not called Hanuman. His mother used to call him Sundar. Sundar means beautiful. So now, I mean, for all of us, when we look at a monkey, we'll not exactly call a monkey beautiful. But for a mother, every child is beautiful, you know, whatever the child is. So Hanumanji's mother named him as Sundar. Hanuman got the name Hanuman much later. When Indra hit the thunderbolt on his chin. So the chin is actually called Hanu in Sanskrit. And somebody was hit by a thunderbolt on the chin, his name became Hanuman. So his original name was Sundar. So the whole Kand is called Sundar Kand because it talks about Sundar, the activities of Hanumanji. It's also called Sundar Kand because there are three beautiful people in Sundar Kand, around whom the Sundar Kand revolves. One is Hanumanji. Here in this section, the beauty of Hanumanji's qualities is manifested. How amazing as a person Hanuman is. The second reason why it is known as Sundar Kand is because here the beauty of the character of Mother Sita is manifested. Really, if we come to understand what kind of a person Sita is. And the third reason is called Sundar Kand was because Hanumanji describes Ram to Sita. And there's an entire section in the Sundar Kand where the beauty of Lord Ram, the beautiful features of Lord Ram is described by Hanumanji. And because Ram is so beautiful, therefore the section is called as Sundar Kand. Of course, today I'm not going to be able to really speak the entire Sundar Kand. It will take like many hours. But I'm going to give you all some very beautiful episodes in the Sundar Kand that will really help you understand and appreciate the greatness of this literature. When Hanumanji saw Mother Sita for the first time, Sita was sitting under a tree and she was very disturbed. So Hanumanji took a very small form and he was sitting on top of the tree. He was waiting for the right opportunity to talk to Mother Sita. He didn't want to be talking to her when everyone is around. There were around 700 demonesses who were put in charge for Mother Sita. So when everyone was around, Hanuman didn't want to be speaking to Sita. So he was waiting for the right time to come. Then Ravan came, really tortured Sita like anything. Though Ravan came and he was torturing Sita, Sita was very cordial and respectful towards Ravan. In fact, the Ramayana talks about how Mother Sita, when Ravan enters to meet her, she throws a piece of grass in front of Ravan. So the Acharyas explained why she throws that piece of grass in front of Ravan. So the Acharyas explained there are actually 13 reasons why Sita throws that piece of grass. The first reason is, though Ravan is a demon, he is coming to meet her. So he's like a guest to her. So she doesn't have anything to offer him. So she offers us, I mean, ideally you're supposed to offer a seat. So she doesn't have any seat over there. She throws a piece of grass, which indicates like a straw mat, you know. The second reason she puts that, throws a piece of grass is that, between a man and woman in those times, they would have like a parda, especially the royal queens, you know. And now there's no question of having any screen or anything like that. So she puts that, you know, grass just as an indicator. The third reason she throws a piece of grass is to tell Ravan that don't think I am alone. She says, the Acharyas explain her thoughts. When Narsingh Dev appeared out of a pillar. So Sita is telling Ravan, my husband can appear out of anywhere. Even from this piece of grass he can appear. So she also wants to tell him that this piece of grass, don't think it is a piece of grass. If I want, this piece of grass can become a weapon. When Bali Maharaj was offering 3 steps of land to Vamanadeva, so he had a sprout in his hand, he was putting water into his palms and he was going to actually make his promise. At that time, Shukracharya, the guru of Bali Maharaj, didn't want Bali to give this 3 pieces of land to Vamanadeva. So he enters into that sprout and blocks the water from coming out. So Shukracharya takes the form of an insect and blocks that sprout. So Bali Maharaj, when he sees the Shukracharya is blocking the water from coming out, he takes a grass and pokes the sprout. That grass actually converts into a Brahmastra. And when he pokes it, it blinds the eye of Shukracharya. And Shukracharya comes out screaming, you know. So Sita is telling Ravan, this is not a piece of grass. If I want, this piece of grass can become a Brahmastra and it can kill you. And then she wants to, another reason why she's telling this, she's telling Ravan that when my husband comes and destroys you and your whole army, you will lose everything and the only thing that will be left is this piece of grass. And she's telling him, you know, you better value this piece of grass because this is the only thing you will be left with soon. And then she also wants to tell that for a person who is attached to sense gratification, he is nothing but an animal. An animal, what does an animal eat? Grass. So he's saying, eat this grass, you know. So like that, Sita is, I mean, just a simple thing. Can you imagine? She's just throwing a piece of grass, that's all. So if you read the Valmiki Ramayana without these understandings, you will completely miss the point. You will think, why is she throwing a piece of grass? It doesn't make any sense. But when we actually analyze it using what the Acharyas are trying to say, it makes so much sense. So Hanumanji sees this conversation of Sita and Ravan, and Ravan gets frustrated. He shouts at Sita and walks away. He gives her a warning. In 2 months, if you don't surrender yourself, I will kill you. And he tells all the Rakshasis, the 700 demonesses who are surrounding Sita, to torture her and trouble her till she submits. Ravan walks away. And these Rakshasis come and start torturing Sita like anything. And after some time, one of the Rakshasis, her name is Trijeta. She is Vibhishan's wife. She comes and she says, don't trouble this lady. And the Rakshasis are telling, you know, what are you saying? She says, I just had a dream. And in my dream, I dreamt that there was a monkey who had come into Lanka. And this monkey was burning the whole city of Lanka. And this monkey was having a serious conversation with this lady. So the Rakshasi is telling all the others that if there's anybody in Lanka who can save all of you, it's this person. So don't trouble her, you know. So when the Rakshasis hear this, they get confused. They don't know what to do. They want to trouble her because Ravan has told them to trouble her. But now they are scared. This is a serious dream that Trijeta had. So whenever the demons are confused about something and they come across a problem that they cannot solve, they deal with it in a very simple way. You know what they do? All the Rakshasis drank wine, went to sleep. This is a standard way demons deal with the problems of life. And I guess that continues even today, right? Most people, when they have problems, they drink and go to sleep. So when the Rakshasis all went to sleep, then Hanumanji realized this is the right time for me to approach Sita. But then he saw something very shocking. Sita was very despondent and very frustrated at this point. So what she did was, she took her hair, she had long plaits of hair, she took her hair and she was hanging it on one of the branches of the tree and she was hanging it around her neck, making it a noose. She was actually going to commit suicide. Can you imagine? Suicide attempts happened even in the Ramayana era. So when Hanumanji sees Mother Sita is going to commit suicide, he gets a shock of his life. Can you imagine what is the situation? He has come all the way to find her. Millions of monkeys are searching all over the world to find Sita. And he is the only one who has found her. And just when he finds her, what is she doing? She is committing suicide here. So Hanumanji panics. Now he doesn't know what to do. He doesn't want her to commit suicide. But at the same time, he doesn't want to make a mistake. Because, so he is analyzing, what should I do to save Sita's life? Usually, when people are excited, they make mistakes. In fact, the greatest mistakes of life are made during greatest excitements. When somebody is very happy, or when somebody is very sad. Those are the two extreme ends where people make greatest mistakes. Like in India, there is a statistics, there is an analysis. Whenever India-Pakistan match happens, you know, cricket match. Whenever India-Pakistan match happens and India wins, that night, the greatest amount of illicit activity happens in India. So, greatest amount of liquor gets consumed in India. Because people are so happy, they don't know what to do with that happiness. So usually, when people are happy, they make mistakes, as I said. Imagine, when a monkey is happy, what they can do, you know. I don't know if you have seen happy monkeys in Vrindavan. If you go, you know, you see these monkeys, they're like so excited, especially when they get something nice to eat. And in that excitement, they do crazy things. Imagine Hanumanji's excitement. Out of millions of monkeys who are searching for Sita, he is the one who has found her. Look at the excitement level at which Hanumanji is. And in that excitement, in spite of that excitement, Hanumanji is analyzing what is the right thing to do. This requires a lot of stability. So Hanumanji is thinking, should I jump in front of her and tell her I am messenger of Ram? So Hanumanji is thinking, if I do that, what if Sita doesn't believe me? And what if Sita thinks that I am Ravan who has come disguised as a monkey? So she might actually, you know, leave the noose and commit suicide faster. So Hanumanji says, no, I can't do that. So Hanumanji is thinking, what should I do? And then he realizes there is one solution for all problems of life. And that is Ram Katha. So Hanumanji sits on top on that branch. He's taken a very small form. He's hiding behind a leaf. And he starts reciting the Ramayana. In a very beautiful and a very soothing voice. As Hanumanji is reciting the Ramayana, down Sita starts hearing. And she realizes there is somebody here who loves Ram. Because in the voice of Hanuman, Sita could actually see, experience love for Ram. Sita actually, removed the noose. She sat down, continued hearing Ram Katha. Hanumanji is sitting on top of the tree, reciting Ramayana. And Sita is sitting below on the ground, hearing Ramayana. This is the first Ram Katha in the history of the world. And interestingly, the first Ram Katha begins with the speaker sitting on a Vyasasan on top, on a tree. And the audience sitting below. So from that time, the Pratha or the tradition has continued in the same way. The speaker sits on top and the audience sits below. Sita is hearing intensely. And after some time, she wants to see who is the speaker. Can you imagine what a situation it is? Hanumanji is hiding behind a leaf and he's speaking. Sita is not able to see who is speaking. So she keeps trying to look who is speaking. She's not able to see. The Acharya has explained, this is the right mood of a Kathakar, of somebody who speaks Ram Katha or Krishna Katha. What is the right mood? The right mood is that a good Kathakar keeps himself hidden and brings Ram and Krishna in the front. But today, if you look at the style in which people do katha, if you go to Vrindavan and you see all these massive, big posters of people who are doing Bhagavad Katha and all, you'll find their photos so huge, and in that poster, you don't find Krishna anywhere. So they are putting themselves in the front and keeping Krishna hiding behind them, basically. So Hanumanji was very humble. He wanted Ram to be in the forefront, and he kept himself hidden. After some time, Sita was very eager to see who the speaker is, and then Hanumanji jumped in front of her. So when Hanumanji jumped in front of her, suddenly, Sita turned her face away. I mean, just imagine you're sitting and hearing something, and suddenly a monkey jumps in front of you. It's a little shock, right? So she just turned her face away. Much later, when they reached Ayodhya, many months later, Sita asked Hanumanji a question. She said, when you jumped in front of me for the first time, when you came in front of me for the first time, I turned my face away from you. Did you feel bad about it? Hanumanji gives a very interesting answer. Hanumanji tells her, my dear mother, what was worth hearing you heard and what was not worth seeing you didn't see. And look at Hanumanji's mood. Look at his consciousness. Sita is looking at Hanuman. He's so small. He's taken a very tiny form. Hanumanji tells Mother Sita, please come with me, I will take you to Lord Ram. Sita is looking at him and thinking, he's such a small person, how will he take me to Ram? So she doesn't want to ask him directly. She doesn't want to hurt him, So she asks him an indirect question. She asks him that, are all the monkeys of Ram's army same size as you? I mean, her question is logical. She's thinking, if Ram comes with an army of such tiny monkeys, and Ravan's army is so huge, so what will they face Ravan's army? So Hanumanji understands what she's thinking. So what Hanumanji does, he expands himself. Huge. He becomes so huge. Suddenly. Now Sita gets completely confused. Just now he was so small. Now suddenly he has become so big. She asks him another question. She asks him, what is your original size? Are you small or are you big? Are you medium size? Just imagine somebody's size keeps changing, it's very difficult to connect to the person. So Hanumanji gives a very interesting answer. He tells Mother Sita that, my dear mother, my original size is that I am very small. I am insignificant. But for the mission of the Lord, I can take any size. So in this statement of Hanumanji, there is a powerful understanding of what humility is. In ISKCON, many times we talk about humility often, but many times we misunderstand what humility is. You know, you tell someone, do some seva, and they'll say, no, Prabhuji, I'm very insignificant, or I'm useless, I can't do this, you know. So in the name of humility, we actually become lazy, you know. We become irresponsible, rather. Look at Hanumanji's answer. He's saying, I'm originally insignificant, I'm originally tiny, but for the mission of the Lord, I can take any size. What is the meaning of size here? He's talking about responsibility. So many people feel that if somebody is humble, they can't take up responsibility. They can't become big, basically. So Hanumanji is saying, his realization is that I am insignificant, but he's saying the Lord can empower me to do anything. That's what Hanumanji's understanding is. So then Sita, Hanumanji tells her, please come with me, I will take you to Lord Ram. Sita says, no, I can't come with you. Hanumanji asks her, why can't you come with me? Sita says, I get scared of heights. When you carry me, you know, away from Lanka, you'll fly in the sky. I get scared of heights. I can't. So Hanuman starts laughing. He tells her, when Ravan got you, he got you in a plane, you know. At that time, you were not scared of heights. Now, why are you scared? So Sita says, no, actually, the reason is that when you carry me away from here, all the demons will attack you. And in that fight, you might forget about me and I will fall into the water. I get scared of the ocean. Hanuman again starts laughing. He tells her, my dear mother, you are Bhumi Suta. Bhumi Suta means Sita was born from the earth. She is earth personified. So Hanuman is telling her, you are earth personified. The ocean is a part of you. Why do you have to get scared of the oceans? So then Sita says, no, actually the actual reason is that, you know, you are Parapurush. That means you are not my husband, so I can't touch you. Hanuman starts laughing again. He tells her, my dear mother, I am your son. A mother can always touch the son. So then finally Sita actually gives him the real reason why she doesn't want to go with him. And look at her mindset. Look at her consciousness. She is telling Hanuman, when the history of Lord Ram gets written, when the history gets written, what will the historians write? The historians will write that a demon got Sita from Ram and brought her to Lanka. And a monkey got her from Lanka back to Ram. What did Ram do? The historians will laugh at my husband. You know, they will laugh at Ram. So Sita says, I want the glory of saving me to go to Ram, go to my husband. And therefore I won't come with you. Hanumanji really understands her mindset. So Hanumanji, you know, he lets go. And then they have other discussions. Finally Hanumanji tells Sita that I'm feeling very hungry. Can I eat some fruits here? Of course, Sita, you know, allows him to eat, and Hanumanji starts eating a lot of fruits in Lanka. Now, in the Ramayana, there are a lot of hungry people. In the Ramayana, there are a lot of stories of people who are really, really hungry, you know. Here, Hanumanji seems to be really hungry for fruits. And then, sometime before, Sampati, there was a huge vulture who was very hungry to eat all the monkeys. And then, little before that, there was a huge demon whose name was Kabanda. Kabanda was a very interesting demon because he didn't have a face. He only had a belly. And his mouth was in the belly directly. And he had huge hands. And he would start grabbing anything and everything and putting it in his mouth, basically. So when we study the Ramayana, we find a lot of hungry people in the Ramayana. And we wonder, what the hell is going on? Why is everyone so hungry, you know? And then when Hanuman was born, to make it even more complicated, when Hanuman was born, he was hungry. And his mother told him that, you know, if you feel hungry, you can eat the red fruits. And Hanuman saw the sun. He jumped towards the sun to eat the sun, thinking it is a big red fruit. So what is this whole meaning of hunger in the Ramayana, you know? There are different types of hunger that the scriptures talk about. One is physical hunger, which can be satiated by food. Then there is mental hunger, which can be satiated by emotional connections, by love, by appreciating one another. And then the third type of hunger is intellectual hunger, which can be satiated. Intellectual hunger is basically the desire to know the truth. So the Ramayana, when we talk about these different people who are hungry, we're actually talking about different types of hunger. So Hanumanji's hunger is not the physical hunger of this world. He's not just physically hungry. When he met Mother Sita, he was not hungry for food on a physical level. He was hungry for love. In fact, why did Hanuman approach Sita in a very tiny form? The only reason Hanuman approached Sita taking a very tiny form was because he wanted to hear the word son from her. He wanted Sita to address him as son, and therefore she took a very tiny form. Because when you see small children, when you see, you know, a small animal or anything small, the Vatsalya Bhava automatically comes out. You know, you feel like giving affection and love. So the hunger that Hanuman manifests in Lanka is a hunger of the mind, the emotional hunger. But the hunger that Hanuman manifests when he was a small child, when he jumps towards the sun, that is intellectual hunger. The sun represents knowledge, the light of knowledge. So when Hanuman jumped towards the sun, he was actually hungry for knowledge. When he swallowed up the sun, actually at the same time as Hanuman jumped towards the sun, there was another person, Rahu, was also approaching the sun. Rahu is the lunar eclipse, basically, the solar eclipse and lunar eclipse. He eats up the sun and the moon. So Rahu was going to eat up the sun, and Hanuman was coming to eat up the sun simultaneously. Before Rahu could eat the sun, Hanuman ate the sun. Why? Because there are two types of people who acquire knowledge, who grasp a lot of knowledge. One type of people, when they gain a lot of knowledge, they use the knowledge only for themselves. They don't benefit the world. They actually are very selfish. They use the knowledge either for themselves, for the benefit of themselves, or for destroying the world. Rahu, when he came to eat the sun, Rahu didn't come with the pure motive. For him, the sun was for his enjoyment, or that knowledge was for his enjoyment. But Hanumanji, when he jumped, he actually jumped to protect the sun from Rahu. So before Rahu could eat the sun, he ate the sun. Why? Because when Hanumanji ate the sun, he was actually saving the sun for the sake of the world. That means Hanuman-like people, when they gain knowledge, they use that knowledge to serve society. So like that, if you study the Ramayana, practically every aspect of the Ramayana has some connotation which is much deeper into our own lives. So when Sita speaks to Hanumanji, there are a lot of discussions that happen. Finally, Sita gives Hanumanji an instruction. She tells Hanumanji that I give Ram 1 month time, 30 days. She tells Hanumanji that in 30 days, if Ram does not rescue me, then I will commit suicide, I will die. So now Hanumanji is in anxiety, because there is a countdown that has already begun. Time has already started, you know. So a lot of people feel the Ramayana and Mahabharata are very slow, boring stuff, you know. But look at the excitement that builds up in the Ramayana at this point. So when Sita tells Hanumanji that you have 30 days for Ram to come and save me, so Hanumanji starts rushing. In the process, he burns Lanka and all that, and then he runs. He jumps across the ocean, reaches where the other monkeys were. And from the shore of the Indian Ocean, they run up to where Lord Ram was. It's in Karnataka. It's quite a distance away. They managed to cover that whole journey in 3 days. So out of 30 days, 3 days are over, you know. And they reach Lord Ram. And there's a whole discussion between Hanuman and Ram about what happened in Lanka. Hanuman explains everything that happens. And then finally, Ram is very happy with Hanumanji, of course. Ram asks Hanuman, I gave you the instruction of going and giving a message to Sita, giving my ring to Sita. Why did you burn Lanka? I never told you to burn Lanka. So Hanumanji tells Ram, my dear Lord, you only made me burn Lanka. So Ram is confused. He says, I am sitting in Kishkinda over here. How did I make you burn Lanka? I mean, those days there were no WhatsApp messages and, you know, telephone calls that you can make. So Hanuman says, let me explain. He says, when I was sitting on top of the tree and listening to all these demons talk to Mother Sita, one of the demoness, Trijata, she told Sita she told all the other demons that a monkey is going to come into Lanka and burn Lanka. So at that point I was thinking, why is she saying this? Does it mean that the Lord wants me to burn Lanka? But Hanuman starts thinking that what if it is the mind's trick? See, sometimes you hear these different voices coming from within you. Sometimes it is the voice of the Paramatma. And sometimes it is the voice of the mind. You know. So Hanumanji wanted to be sure it is actually Lord Ram's voice, Lord Ram's desire. So he realized that if I do something on my own, then I can't say it is Ram's desire, it is my desire. You know, it's my actions. So Hanuman said, I have to be in a situation where I can't do anything on my own. And therefore, he created a whole fight in Lanka. And finally, Indrajit bound him with a Brahmastra, a Brahmapash. So Hanuman was bound tightly with the Brahmapash. He could not move 1 inch. From top to bottom, his body was bound. And he was taken to Lanka, to Ravan's court. And in Ravan's court, there was a discussion. Ravan, he said, kill this monkey. Because, can you imagine, Hanuman created havoc over there. He killed one of Ravan's son, Akshay Kumar. And Hanuman gets really, Ravan gets really angry. And he says, kill this monkey. At that point, Vibhishan gets up. Vibhishan is Ravan's brother. Vibhishan tells Ravan, you can't kill a messenger. At best, you can cut off some limb of his, you injure him, you harm him, but you can't kill him. And then there's a whole discussion, what to do with this monkey? So somebody is saying cut his hand, somebody is saying cut his leg, somebody is saying scratch him all over his body. They're all giving different ideas what to do with the monkey, how to torture him. Then finally, one person, Ravan himself says, the pride of a monkey is in his tail. So somebody says, let's cut his tail. Then Ravan says, no, better than cutting his tail is, let's burn his tail. Let him experience pain. So now, then Ravan, he orders his people to get cloth to bind the tail of Hanuman. And he says, get oil to wet the cloth. And then he says, get fire. Now Hanuman is standing over there bound, you know, hands and legs tied. Hanuman starts smiling. He says, where the hell did Ravan get this idea from? I mean, of all the things that Ravan could do, he got the idea of burning Hanuman's tail. And he arranged for the cloth, he arranged for the oil, he arranged for the fire. Hanuman is thinking, this is purely Ram's desire. Ram has put this desire in Ravan's brains. And he is getting the work done through Ravan only. And then Hanuman's tail starts expanding. They start tying cloth on the tail. The tail expands so huge that practically all the cloth in Lanka is over. All the cloth is tied on Hanuman's tail. This is like Damodar Leela, you know, in Vrindavan. The tail keeps expanding. And they get unlimited cloth. And after tying all the cloth, still there is more tail left. So Ravan gives his own uttari to tie. So they tie his, then all the ministers give their shawl to tie. And finally there is no cloth left in Lanka. And then Ravan says, get Sita's sari also. As soon as Ravan says that, Hanumanji's tail stops growing. And then they realize that no more cloth needed. Then they put oil on Hanumanji's tail. All the oil in Lanka is over. There is no oil left in the entire Lanka. All the oil on the tail of Hanuman. Then they set the tail on fire. As soon as they set the tail on fire, Hanuman breaks loose from the Brahmapash. And he starts jumping around, burns the whole city. He's telling Ram, my dear Lord, I couldn't do anything because I was bound. So it is not my desire. You desired that Ravan, you know, get this idea, and therefore you put that desire in his mind because you are the Paramatma within his own heart. So Ram could not say anything. You know. So then Hanuman tells Ram that we have a 30-day period, of which 3 days are already over. Only 27 days are left. So Ram orders the whole monkey army to march down towards the south. So the entire army marches towards the south. So when a small division of the monkey army came towards Kishkinda, it took them 3 days. But when the entire army went towards the south, it's a huge army, it takes time to move, it took them 12 days. So now 3 plus 12, 15 days are over. And then Ram sits on the shore of the Indian Ocean and he prays to the ocean god, Varuna Dev, for giving a pathway to go to Lanka, for the whole army to go to Lanka. 3 days, Varuna Dev doesn't come only. He doesn't really respond to Ram's prayers. After 3 days, Ram gets really upset. Because now already 15 plus 3, 18 days are over. Ram really gets angry. He removes his bow and arrow. He wants to dry up the whole ocean. At that point, the ocean god comes out. Ram says, some people don't understand when we talk kindly to them. You have to punish them, you know. The ocean god comes out and he surrenders and he says, my dear lord, please build a bridge on me and I will give you the pathway. And then Ram orders the monkeys to build a bridge. A 800 mile long, 80 mile wide bridge. It takes the whole army. Can you imagine how fast they build it? 5 days. 5 days flat. They build a bridge across the ocean. I mean, I don't think the best of the engineers today can ever build a bridge across an ocean, 800 mile long bridge in 5 days. So then, it's now 18 plus 5. How many days? 23 days are over. Then the war begins. The entire war between Ram and Ravan lasts exactly for 7 days. On the 7th day, Ram kills Ravan. And that happens to be the 30th day on which Mother Sita had given. And exactly, you know, the climax reaches a point where Sita is rescued right on time. But the story doesn't get over there. Because the day Sita gets rescued, the day Ravan dies, which is the 30th day of Mother Sita, also happens to be the last day of the 14th year of their exile. They were supposed to be exiled for 14 years. Bharat had told Ram, after 14 years of exile, if you come even one day late, I will commit suicide. Now Ram saves Sita, now he has to go and save Bharat, you know. So Ram tells Vibhishan, can you give me a Pushpak Viman? Because, you know, going all the way to Ayodhya in one day is not going to be possible otherwise. So then Ram and Sita get into the Pushpak Viman, all the monkeys get into the plane. Now Pushpak Viman is a very interesting plane. It's not like planes of today, you know. It actually expands. The more passengers get in, the plane becomes bigger. So all the monkeys got into the plane really expanded. And then the plane started flying. And as they were flying, Ram was showing Sita all the different sites and locations from the time, you know, she was kidnapped. And at one point, they come to Kishkindha, which is the place of the monkeys. So when the plane reaches Kishkindha, Sita tells Ram, we need to go get down here in Kishkindha because I want all the monkey women to come with us for the coronation in Ayodhya. Ram tells her, come on, for human women to dress up, it takes some time. I don't know how long it's going to take for the monkey woman to get dressed up. Bharat is going to die over there. I can't afford to. Sita says, nothing doing. Without them, we are not going. And then the plane comes down. And all the monkey women get into the plane. The plane expands even further. And then the plane goes towards Ayodhya. Just before reaching Ayodhya, the plane gets down at Bharadwaj Muni's ashram. Because Ram had told Bharadwaj Muni that before going back to Ayodhya, I will visit your ashram and go. So Ram gets off there, everyone gets off there. Ram tells Hanuman, you go ahead and meet Bharat. Tell Bharat that I'm coming. And Ram tells Hanuman that when you're giving the news to Bharat that I'm coming, look at his eyes. If you see in Bharat's eyes, even a little bit of attachment towards, because 14 years he has been the king. Ram says, if you see in his eyes, even a little bit of attachment towards the kingdom, just tell me and I will never come back to Ayodhya. So Hanuman goes, you know, ahead, and when he reaches where Bharat was, Bharat had lit a huge fire and he was going to jump into the fire because Ram has not come back, you know. So then Hanumanji reaches over there and he sees a second suicide attempt, you know. I mean, Hanumanji is, you know, saving all these people who are committing suicide constantly. So I always tell people, and then Hanumanji sits on top of the tree and he starts reciting Ram Katha again. So as Bharat hears Ram Katha, he kind of cools down and he doesn't jump into the fire. So I always tell people, if you are thinking of committing suicide, before you commit suicide, hear Ram Katha once. Maybe your mind will change. So then Bharat realizes that there is somebody who is a messenger of Ram here. So he stops. Then Hanuman comes in front of Bharat and he tells him that Ram is coming. And looks at Bharat's eyes and he sees so much excitement, so much happiness. And then Hanumanji goes to Lord Ram and tells him that, you know, Bharat is extremely happy and is in the right consciousness. And then, by the time when Hanuman reaches, everybody is eating prasad. Everyone is sitting and eating prasad on their plates, on their, you know, banana leaves basically. And then there is no plate left for Hanuman. So now Ram is thinking, you know, where is he going to eat from? So Ram calls Hanuman and in his own plate, in his own leaf, he makes a line with his hand. And he tells Hanuman, you eat on this side of the leaf, I'll eat on this side of the leaf. From that time onwards, the banana leaves have a line in between. If you notice, the banana leaves have like a, that is Ram's finger, basically. You know? So look at the connection between Ram and Hanuman. You know, there's such a beautiful connection between the Lord and his devotees. The Lord is so happy with Hanumanji's, you know, a beauty in terms of his qualities and his dedication. One time, Narad Muni comes to Hanuman. This is like the last thing I'll conclude today's session. This story just really talks about the beauty of Hanuman's personality and qualities. And the story actually is one of my favorite stories of the Ramayana. So, Narad Muni once comes to Hanumanji and he tells Hanuman that there are so many devotees of the Lord. Do you know who is the favorite devotee of Ram? Favorite devotee of the Lord. There's so many devotees. Hanuman says, why do we have to know? Why don't you go and ask Lord Ram? He has a diary. So Narad Muni said, oh, I didn't know there was a diary. So Hanuman says, go and ask him. So Narad Muni goes to Lord Ram and he asks him, my dear Lord, do you have a diary of the names of the devotees? Ram says, yes, it's lying over there. Go and see. There was a huge diary. And Narad Muni opens the diary and there's a whole list of names of all the devotees. First name is Narada. Narad Muni becomes so happy. His name is first in that list. And then he reads all the names in that list. And then he finds something interesting. He finds that Hanuman's name is not there at all in the whole list. So he goes to Hanuman. He tells him, you know, my dear Hanuman, I have a good news and a bad news. The good news is that my name is there in that list and it's right on top. But the bad news is that you're such a great devotee. Why is your name not there? Hanuman looks at Narada and he tells him, have you seen the small diary of Lord Ram? So Narada Muni gets confused. He said, is there a small diary also? So he says, go and ask Ram. So, you know, Narad Muni goes back to Lord Ram and he asks him, my dear Lord, do you have a small diary? Ram actually takes out the diary from really close to his heart and gives it to Narad Muni. So Narad Muni opens that small diary. In that small diary, the first name is Hanuman. And in that diary, Narad Muni's name is not there only. So Narad Muni gets really bewildered. He goes to Lord Ram and he asks him, my dear Lord, what's going on? Some names are here and some names are not here. What's happening? So Ram tells Narad Muni, the big diary contains the names of all those devotees who constantly remember me. And the small diary contains the names of all those devotees whom I constantly remember. You can imagine, you know, what the position of Hanumanji if the Lord is actually remembering him constantly, you know. So when we talk about Hanumanji's glories and we talk about the Sundar Kanda of the Ramayana, which really brings out the beautiful qualities of Hanumanji, it is those qualities that really make him attractive to the eyes of the Lord. So all of us, we are aspiring to become devotees of the Lord. We are aspiring to please the Lord. Hanumanji represents that one person who is the epitome of all that. So we should definitely pray to Hanumanji that some of his qualities that is manifesting the devotion towards Lord Ram manifest in our heart in a small way. And hopefully someday, forget the small and big diary, we will read some diary of the Lord. You know? Right now we are not even qualified to be in any of the diaries of the Lord. But hopefully someday we will get into one of the diaries. And if possible, getting into the small diary, that's like the ultimate goal of life, where the Lord remembers us. Hare Krishna. Any quick questions or comments at this point? So today evening,
So how come Hanuman's name wasn't in the big diary if he's like the dearest devotee?
Being in the small diary is bigger than being in the big diary.
Yeah, but then how do you qualify for the small diary if you're not in the big one?
Your name goes there first, then it goes there. When your name is in the small diary, it's understood it is also there in the big diary. Makes sense? Anyways. So today evening, we're going to do something very interesting. There is a book I've written called Open-Eyed Meditations, which is a very, very interesting way of looking at life. So I'm going to be discussing many stories from the Ramayana and the Mahabharata. Putting it in the context of life. We're going to see it in life perspective. So it's something that will be very revealing to all of us, because it will really help us understand how our scriptures have immediate relevance in our lives. It is said that the Mahabharata, the Ramayana teaches you how to lead in this world, the art of leading, leadership basically. The Mahabharata teaches you how to live in this world, the art of living. And the Srimad Bhagavatam teaches you how to die, the art of dying, how to leave this world, you know. So, all of us are very heavily into Srimad Bhagavatam. We study the Bhagavatam intensely, which is the art of leaving this world, the art of dying. But it's also good sometimes to study the art of living, how to live in this world, which is what the Mahabharata and the Ramayana teaches us. So we'll get a perspective of life today evening, and hopefully some of what we discuss in the evening will help you personally. Tomorrow morning, I'm going to be doing a session on a story from one of the Puranas. It's actually a part of the Jaimini Bharat. This is one of the, it's a mind-blowing story. It's a book I have written called Mystical Tales for a Magical Life. This has got some crazy stories. So tomorrow morning what you will hear is probably one of the craziest stories you will ever hear from the scriptures. Guarantee, you know. But the most amazing thing from this story is, there is such a powerful message for us in our personal lives. So we'll be doing a PowerPoint presentation tomorrow morning, and we'll be studying, discussing that story. And tomorrow afternoon, the Sunday feast, I'll be speaking a topic known as Understanding Ramayana Symbolically. If you hear that seminar, that session, the way you look at Ramayana will never be the same. It'll completely change the perspective towards Ramayana, and you'll be convinced that I don't know Ramayana at all. So these are the three sessions that we're doing ahead. So I would like to invite all of you all to please be a part of these sessions, and hopefully it'll help you in your personal journeys towards Krishna consciousness. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna. Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
Yes.
Thank you very much for your wonderful class and enlightenment on Ramayana and Hanuman. In ISKCON, there is not Ramayana, especially in the West, is not so much known. We are actually don't have many references. Do you know there's some plan that in ISKCON also will publish something like, you know, detail, like verse to verse?
Yeah, yeah. There is already Vidwan Gaurang Prabhu working on it.
Who?
Vidwan Gaurang Prabhu from Mayapur. He's already working on it. The Balakand of the Ramayana is already out in 3 volumes. Verse by verse.
Verse by verse, like, yeah. Like, yeah. Bhagavatam, yeah, yeah. Style.
Yeah, he's already started doing it.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
And what is your reference? Which Ramayana are you reading or you taking from? Because there are many versions, right? And they have different details and different also.
Yeah. So basically my base is Valmiki Ramayana. That's like, everybody's base has to be Valmiki Ramayana. There's no other go, you know. So Valmiki Ramayana is a base. But I add analogies and poetic expressions from Kamba Ramayana, which is the Sri Vaishnava version of Ramayana, you know. And then analogies and poetic expressions from Tulsidas Ramayana, Ramacharitramanas. And in addition to all this, there are commentaries for different acharyas from the Sri Sampradaya. Not just Sri Sampradaya, there are acharyas in North and Ayodhya also. Very powerful commentaries, understanding the Ramayana more deeper. So I add that also into it. In addition to all this, I add folk tales, which is called Loka Praman, you know. Stories that are embedded in the length and breadth of India, which are in philosophical alignment to the Valmiki Ramayana. So those are also added into the storyline. In addition to all this, I add life lessons. What I understand from the story of the Ramayana. So this book, this series, the Ramayana, the Game of Life series, is like a mix of all this, basically. So, of course, I write it in a style which is very, very contemporary, a modern style, which is, it almost feels like you're reading a novel. But at the same time, it's authentic, you know, nothing is going here and there, nothing is deviating from what the acharyas have to say. But something that a modern reader will be able to appreciate in a language that a modern reader will be able to appreciate. Yeah. That's
all. Thank you. And one personal question. You mentioned yesterday that your root is Sri Sampradaya. Your personal roots, past and that. And then And now you're a prominent member of Gaudiya Vaishnava. How, as a member of Shri Sampradaya, how you were attracted to Gaudiya Vaishnava and Prabhupada? Is that what, because there is a more emphasis on the Vishnu and other Lord's forms, avatars. How did you connect it with the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Prabhupada in this?
Two reasons. The first thing is Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya at this point, it doesn't have great teachers who can teach in a very practical, easily understandable manner, basically. So most of them are very, very scholarly, who speak a language that nobody understands, or they are very, very, their practice is not really stable. A lot of people, lot of Sri Vaishnavas, their mindset unfortunately becomes a lot like, the Christian mindset, you can say, like a lot of people think that once you surrender to Jesus, he will take care of all my sins, I don't have to do anything, basically. So a lot of people in the Shri Vaishnavism also think in that way. They think that once you are initiated in the Shri Sampradaya, I can do anything, Ramanuja will take care of me. So people are in that mood, unfortunately, they are not really studying their roots properly and understanding. So when I came across ISKCON and when I came across Srila Prabhupada's teachings, the teachings are so profound and so clear, that my understanding of my own Sampradaya Shri Vaishnavism increased much more. Today, I can probably speak 10 hours on Ramanuja's life, on the different Acharyas of South India. I can speak 10 hours, 12 hours constantly. Just because Prabhupada gave us that access to understanding spirituality in the right way. And then for me to help understand my own roots becomes easier. Right? So most Sri Vaishnavas today, I don't think they can speak about Ramanuja even for 10 minutes. Unfortunately. Because they have not been able to create that interest. So I feel that Gaudiya Vaishnavism has helped me connect with Sri Vaishnavism much more intensely. So I'm a better Sri Vaishnava today as a Gaudiya Vaishnava, in that sense.
And how your family and relatives respond to that probably was quite a challenge.
They're still responding. I mean, after I started writing the Ramayana, they really began to understand what I'm doing, because till that point of time, they just felt that I'm in a different world and doing different things, connecting with the Western, guru. So they had all these weird conceptions, basically. But then once I wrote the Ramayana, and we had like a book launch of Ramayana in Chennai, in South India, in Tamil Nadu, and all my relatives were there. This is the first book launch where the audience were only my relatives. 50, 60 of them, all Sri Vaishnava scholars, basically. And, then I spoke Ramayana there. They really appreciated that. And then one Sri Vaishnava scholar, one of the biggest scholars of Sri Vaishnavism today, he's a guru in Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya. He stays in Srirangam. So he had read my books and he came and he spoke. 45 minutes he was glorifying the Ramayana, the Game of Life series. Glorifying like anything. He's saying, I am going to promote this series. I'm going to make sure every Sri Vaishnava reads this book, So when my relatives heard all that, they realized, that this fellow is doing something good at least, And a Sri Vaishnava glorifying a Gaudiya Vaishnava is unheard actually. Very rare. Because Sri Vaishnavas feel that they are much more superior than Gaudiya Vaishnavas, in their own understanding. But he was so openly appreciating, the writings. And he said this is very much in alignment with what Ramanuja has taught and all that. So after that endorsement by the Sri Vaishnava, then my relatives also started appreciating and connecting. Hopefully someday they will connect with Srila Prabhupada even more.
Thank you. And what were the reasons that you start writing books? Because originally you're not like, you're an engineer, electrical engineer. How come? What inspired you? And now you're such a profound writer, writing books in immense frequency.
It's turning out like a factory.
Intensity. like a manufacturer.
So, I'll tell you what my background of writing is, why I started writing. It's very important for us to understand. We have a school in Bombay. It's called as Gopal's Garden School. This is a school for devotee kids mainly. Of course, now we opened it up for other kids. But It's mainly to teach values in our society and really help develop children with right value systems. I used to go to that school for almost 5 years consecutively to teach value education, a subject values and morals. One day I went to the library of the school just to see what the kids are reading, you know. They were like good quality library with thousands of books in it. And as I was going through the books in the library, I was disappointed. Because all the books in the library were filled with books written by Westerners who are writing just, you know, any kind of novels, basically, like Harry Potter, you know. All the Harry Potter series was there in that shelf, you know. Percy Jackson, you know, Hardy Boys, Nancy Drew, you know. And this is what our kids are reading. So I realized, I was trying to find where are their authentic scriptures over there in that list. Yes, Prabhupada's books were there and all that. But I realized the kids need books that are exciting, like an adventure, in a story form, in a form that is easy to connect. So I started really saying, you know, why are our kids not reading this and that? And I was really disappointed. Then when I contemplated, I realized it's our fault. The kids are reading what they have access to. They need good English. They need good stories. They need exciting stuff to read. If we don't provide it, somebody else is providing it, and they are reading it. So that's when I realized that if I don't, instead of finding problems, I need to find solutions. So that day I decided I'm going to start writing. And for me, the most natural thing to start writing was Ramayana, because, you know, I had heard the Ramayana from my grandmother at least 100 times. So it's, you know, I just felt that I need to start there, you know. So I started the Ramayana books, and fortunately the first book itself got published by one of the biggest publishers in India, like, and the first book itself became a bestseller, and then it became like a whole sequence of things. Yeah.
Can you just briefly introduce the books, just shortly, very shortly?
So basically I have written, right now I have about 8 books with me here. You'll see them whenever the stall is. Oh, you all have them. Can you get me a set? So these 8 books, are 4 of them are of the Ramayana series. It's called Ramayana, the Game of Life. So as I said, Ramayana has 6 khandas or 6 volumes, of which first 4 are here. So this is the first volume of the Ramayana. This is a Balakand. It's not called Balakand. It's called Roar with Courage. You know. So I worked a lot on the packaging to make it look appealing to a regular new person also. So this is 4 books, basically. The Ramayana, the Game of Life series, it's called. The storyline is flowing, and below there are footnotes, which are lessons that we can learn from the story. In addition to that, there is a book I've written called as Open-Eyed Meditations. This is a book that I recommend every devotee should read. It can be potentially a life transforming book. This book has 64 articles or 64 chapters, 2 pages each, that's all. Each chapter talks about one problem or one aspect of life that we are dealing with. Challenges in relationships, leadership, dealing with success, dealing with failures, dealing with our own minds, dealing with hatred, envy, so many aspects that we are struggling with. Forgiveness. So each chapter talks about one aspect of life seen through the lens of the Ramayana and Mahabharata. So it's straight from our scriptures, you know. So the word open-eyed meditations comes from a Sanskrit word called Shastra Chakshu. Shastra Chakshu, essentially, Chakshu means eyes. And Shastra means scriptures. That means keeping your eyes open and seeing the world through the eyes of the scriptures. So this book got written in a very interesting way. Wherever I would travel and meet and interact with people, people would ask me questions. And every time somebody would ask me a question, I would go back and write an article on it as an answer to that question through the lens of the Ramayana Mahabharata. And that's how this book came to existence. This book has become a bestseller in India. In fact, I have developed a whole course on leadership based on this book. I'm teaching this course. It's a full credit course on leadership. I'm teaching this course in one of the biggest institutes in India. It's called the Indian Institute of Management, IIM. And IIM is like the Ivy League in many of the other countries, basically. To become a student in IIM is impossible, almost. And I am, because of this book, I am a professor in that college. So most people, to become professor in that college, you need to have a PhD. I don't even have a master's degree, and I am a professor there. This is a book which is called as Perfect Love. This book has 6 love stories from our scriptures. Each love story talks about one way how to make relationships last. This has some of the most famous love stories in our scriptures put in the context of today's times. So this is Naladamayanti, Shakuntala Dushyanta, Satyavan Savitri, Krishna Rukmini, all these stories written in a very interesting way, but at the same time with lessons that you can derive on relationships. So the tagline says 5.5 ways of lasting relationships. So I always recommend this. If any devotee is going to get married or is already married, please read this book. It will save so many marriages, basically. You know? So this is a book that many people, not just devotees, outsiders, have really appreciated in terms of the relationship lessons that you can learn from it.
Why is 5.5?
That you will understand only when you read it. This is a book called Mystical Tales for a Magical Life. It's a very interesting book. It has 11 unheard stories from our scriptures. These are the most craziest of the crazy stories. As I said, you will never find crazier stories than this. And there's a reason why I wrote this book. I was seeing that people are so fascinated by Harry Potter because there's so much magic in it, so much mysticism in it. And I realized that a lot of mysticism is based on our scriptures. And then I started exploring all those stories in our scriptures that are weird. And that's how I came across this book. 11 unheard stories from our scriptures. But the best part is, each of these stories will entertain you, but in addition, they will also enlighten you. That's what this book is about. And finally, the last book, this is called as Two Fingers Short. This is a very sweet book. This is like, nectar explosion. This is Damodar Leela. Only Damodar Leela, entire book on Damodar Leela. But the whole idea of this book is, it gives you those aspects of Damodar Leela that probably you would have never heard in your life. It goes really deep into the Damodar Leela. So this book, a lot of devotees use during Kartik month for preaching to new people, Damodar Ashtakam classes and all that. And of course, for personal nourishment. So these are all 8 books that are available with us right now. More to come soon. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. Seeking all your blessings so I can continue on this journey of helping the world flood with the right kind of literature which can touch people's hearts. The good part is these books are available in bookstores across India, where non-devotees who go and read all kinds of things get access. Yes,
do you have them in Europe?
Yeah, in Europe right now it's in Slovenia in this temple. So we don't have access in the stores in Europe as of now.
You're working with BLS maybe?
Yeah. BLS already has some supply of our books. Yeah.
But not in the regular.
Not in the regular market. No. Take time. Probably someday in future. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. Grateful to all of you all.
Hare Krishna.